This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity Podcast. This is the podcast for CEOs of private equity and venture capital funded companies. Again, it's Scott Becker, founder, publisher of Becker's Healthcare and of Becker Private Equity, as well as partner at McGuire Woods. It's thrilled today to get to visit with Rick Keller. Rick served in Congress for multiple terms. Brilliant, brilliant person. He's got a new book coming out, but he's also going to tell us about what was it like, about his career, about leadership advice, and a lot more. Rick, tell us the basics to start with. Tell us a little bit about you and your career serving in Congress and the name of the book that you've got coming out.
Well, I got off to a fancy start. I was fired from Wendy's when I was 15 years old, and they told me you don't have what it takes to make it in fast food. So I figured, you know, what are my only options? And of course, it's just running for the U.S. Congress is what I end up choosing. And I didn't have any rich friends or political connections or experience even. I was a huge underdog. And I'm in my first debate, and the people against me both have 8 years experience. And one of them called me an amateur. And I said, you know, I am an amateur, but it was amateurs who built Noah's Ark and professionals who built the Titanic. And I didn't hear about that issue anymore. And my sense of humor helped me out quite a bit in that first campaign, although at some point it became a disaster. I'm losing by 27 points in the polls. I'm out fundraised 4-1, and I'm asked to drop out by the head of my party, and I'm depressed. So I go home that night and I'm watching a Seinfeld episode called The Opposite. And in that episode, everything is screwed up with George's life. So he decides to do the opposite. And I was like, you know, that's what I need to do. And so I wrote a little card that said, I'm going to raise $400,000 by a certain date. It's kind of like out of Think and Grow Rich there, and called the CEO of Amway 21 times in a row. And he finally called me back and he said, why do you keep calling me? And I said, because I want you to give $1,000 to my campaign. And he said, well, if I give you $1,000, do you promise you'll never call me again? And I said, yes, sir. And so I learned that when an Amway sales guy thinks I'm the one that's too pushy, I'm probably too pushy. But the big break that changed my whole life was there was a group of CEOs and business leaders got together in Washington. It was called the Club for Growth. And they were going to put some big money into a handful of congressional races back in 2000. And it was like American Idol for politicians. They searched the country. They narrowed it down to 16 finalists. And I flew up there as one of the 16. And I was the last one to speak. And everybody in front of me was real serious and talking about Laffer curves and capital gains taxes and that sort of thing. And my gut instinct just told me to be light. And so I opened with this joke. I said, you know, I've been here for hours and I feel like Elizabeth Taylor's seventh husband on his wedding night. Technically, I know what I'm supposed to do, but at this point, I don't know how to make it interesting. And that little line changed my whole life. That group ranked me number one in the country. They spent $400,000 to support me, the exact amount on my goal. And a few months later, I was elected to Congress and served for four terms and became chairman of the Higher Education Subcommittee. So it was a unconventional path to office, but that's how it all went down.
So that's absolutely fascinating. And there's so many things that you mentioned there. You mentioned Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, and that kind of positive attitude and so forth, which I just love. The Club for Growth. I mean, you must be from the Grand Rapids area or that area of the world if you were pitching Amway at that point. I mean, fascinating. And a beautiful area, quite frankly. And talk about sort of the name of your book that you've either got coming out or has come out. Tell us about that for a second.
So I'm sitting at my kitchen table with my wife one Sunday morning, and we're reading the paper and drinking coffee, and outside the window is a family of bears that just ran by, a mama bear and three little bears. And my wife and I, and she's a smart girl, Harvard Business School grad and everything, didn't say anything. We just got up and raced and chased these bears, trying to extend this amazing experience. And we never caught up with them. But afterwards, after the smoke is settling, I said, you know, Lori, one of us should be normal. This, you know, somebody should have said this is not a good idea. Those bears run 35 miles an hour, an Olympic sprinter 28. So if that mama bear wanted to turn around and chase us, could have got us. And it occurred to me in that moment that, you know what, maybe this is what people are supposed to be doing. It's a metaphor in life, because most people in that circumstance would have played it safe, stay inside, look out their window as life passes them by, and eventually the clock runs out. Other people go for what they want, and they chase the dreams, and they chase their bears. And so when I decided to write my book, I decided to call it Chase the Bears.
Fascinating. And talk for a moment. I can't not bother you a little bit about politics. It's such an interesting time right now. I assume you are from Michigan. Is that a fair statement? Are you a Michigander? Or?
No, I was born in Tennessee and then grew up in Orlando, Florida.
Gotcha. So how did you get to the Amway people is the next question, because that's a very much a base in Grand Rapids type of place. But how did you end up with the Amway as the person you were calling for donations? How did you end up with that?
Yeah, it was Rich DeVos, and at the time he was the owner of the Orlando Magic. And since they were one of the big employers in town, that he was one of the key people on my list. And it was a really important call to me, because I was an underdog. And once the CEO of Amway got on board, it opened the floodgates. And then I had 20, 30 other CEOs join in. So it was really a pivotal moment in my career. And it was just a matter, I think he just grudgingly respected that I wouldn't give up. And he's like, you know, I'm going to help this kid out.
It's like having a reference account. Someone like him is like having a reference account. You can point to him. If he's going to contribute, then I must be a good candidate. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. And talk a bit about, I mean, Florida's a fascinating political state still. I mean, you've got this fascinating race coming up with DeSantis and Charlie Crist, and just a fascinating sort of, you know, it's really a microcosm of the electorate. It's very much goes red and blue, and give you either one. D.C. seems so dysfunctional right now. Debt is going through the roof. Congress is spending like crazy. Well, at the same point, you've got this, Chairman Powell trying to control inflation. It seems just completely dysfunctional. Do you have a better view of that? Is it more functional than us outsiders think it is? Or is it really as dysfunctional as it seems? Or you've got like these two conflicting things going on, crazy spending going on. Well, Powell's trying to control inflation. I mean, it seems just totally messed up. Any thoughts on that or what you see today?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think you're right. Florida is the biggest swing state in the country, so we get a lot of attention there, especially in the presidential years. We get a lot more. In terms of D.C., the biggest challenge I see in our nation right now, if I had to pick one thing, is the erosion of civility. And we have divisive politicians and screaming talking heads and people writing really nasty things on Twitter anonymously. And I would say 9 out of 10 people think it's a big problem with the lack of civility. And I think there's 3 solutions to it. I'm optimistic. Number one, I think you've got to listen with an open mind to what the other person has to say. I don't think it would kill a Democrat to listen to what a right-leaning CEO of a Fortune 500 company has to say about creating jobs. I think they may learn something. I don't think it would kill a Republican to listen to what a left-leaning Harvard professor says about how to increase access to education for poor kids. So keep your mind open, number one. And number two, I think we just got to be respectful. You don't have to agree on everything or anything, really. Just be respectful in your responses, you know, and that's what we seem to be missing here. And then the third thing is I think we have to put relationships above division. Like it used to be back in when I was there, if you got 10 issues and we agree on 7 and disagree on 3, you're my friend and you're not my opponent and you're going to help me out on something else. Nowadays, if somebody disagrees with you on anything, they're worthless and they're horrible and they suck and it's just a totally different climate. But I'm optimistic we can turn things around. And one of the reasons is if you may remember the story of Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, and they were best friends. They wrote the Declaration of Independence together, same committee, and then they ran at each other for president. There was bad blood, nasty campaign. They didn't speak to each other for 12 years. And then they decided, this is crazy. And they decided to start writing each other, and they became best friends again and renewed their relationship. So that gives me optimism that it's not too late to turn things around.
No, thank you. And you've been working in leadership, you've been working in Congress. What's the core of what you do today? What do you do for a living today? And then what advice do you have for leaders and business founders and so forth? What advice do you give to people?
So I'm a partner in a law firm down in Orlando. I'm a litigator, do defense work, always on behalf of the corporations in trial. But my biggest passion lately is I wrote this book, Chase the Bears. And the Chase the Bears is essentially a modern day version of Think and Grow Rich. The same type of key principles about writing your goal down and using auto-suggestion and visualization. And the reason I wrote it is really personal to me. I was 14 years old, and I'd never even met my dad before. And so he came to town on a business convention. He's a State Farm agent, and he handed me Think and Grow Rich, this little paperback book. And he said, I know I haven't been there for you. I think this book may change your life. It changed my life, Rick. And so I read it 6 times, and I wasn't really willing to call him dad at that point. It was a stranger. But 3 years later, I was willing to call him dad, and I was willing to put this experiment to a test. And I set a goal to graduate first in my class in college with a 4.0, even though I was a mediocre student. And that happened. And then I used those principles to say, I'm going to get elected to Congress, even though I was an underdog. That happened. And so now that I'm older, I just turned 58 this month, I don't want to get the trophies anymore. My passion is to help other people get the trophies. How can I lift others up and bring them together? And I thought, you know, the best thing I could do is write a modern day version of Think and Grow Rich. And so the same principles, but instead of talking about Andrew Carnegie and Henry Ford, I'm talking about Steve Harvey and Oprah Winfrey and Jim Carrey and modern day celebrities that people know and can relate to. And so that's my passion. My book is released on September 27. It's out now. And so I hope people get it. In terms of the advice you asked, what would I give to leaders? I would say 3 things. Number one is use your gifts. That's the most important thing. We're all given a gift. And people always say, you can do whatever you want in life. And I think that's just BS, man. If Albert Einstein had decided to be a professional bull rider, he would have been E=MC² on his butt in 8 seconds, you know. But he used his gifts and won a Nobel Prize in physics. We should all do the same. Second is persistence. I got fired from Wendy's and still got elected to Congress. Walt Disney was fired at 22 for not being creative enough. Dr. King was given a C in public speaking. Michael Jordan was cut from his basketball team. Oprah was told that she was unfit for television news. The Beatles were told they didn't have what it takes to make it in the record business. J.K. Rowling was rejected by everybody. Your book's not going to make it. And now it's the biggest selling book of all time, Harry Potter. And so keep going, man. Don't worry about the critics or rejection. Just be persistent. And the final thing is don't take yourself too seriously, especially for CEOs. Self-deprecating humor is a secret power, man. It relaxes people. It deflects criticism, it builds rapport. And if a CEO has the self-confidence to use self-deprecating humor, it really bridges the status difference between the worker and the CEO and has a wonderful effect in the workplace. And there's studies on it. I did a TED talk called The Secret Power of Self-Deprecating Humor, which I mentioned it. But if someone uses their gifts and they keep going and they don't take themselves too seriously, I think that's a pretty darn good formula for lifetime success.
So we absolutely love this. So I was re-listening just yesterday to a Zig Ziglar tape about life and so forth, you know, which is, I put in the same category as the, you know, Carnegie and also Dale Carnegie and the Napoleon Hill and so forth. What other authors? Are there other authors or speakers that have had an influence on you that you have found inspiring or helpful or thoughtful? I mean,
yeah, what a wonderful question. I would, the three biggest books that have changed my life, number one is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. Number two, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And number three is a book that's out right now. It's called From Strength to Strength by a guy named Albert C. Brooks. And he's a Harvard Business School professor. And it's game changing, man. It essentially says that we have 2 curves in life. The first one is to go get the trophies and do as many achievements as you can. And the second curve, the people who are miserable when they get in the 50s or 60s, are the people who still keep trying to do the first curve, you know, the child actor who keeps hanging on, the athlete who keeps trying to do athletes. And what you should do in that second curve, if you really want to be happy, is lift others and be a teacher and be a mentor. And when you do that, you find incredible happiness. And he wrote a book about it because he had his own struggles, and it's mind-blowing. It's one of the most powerful books. It opened at number one on the New York Times bestseller list, and it was humbling for me because I was a first-time author, and I reached out to him and I said, I love your book. And he said, well, send me yours. And he sent me mine, and he endorsed it and gave me a glowing review, and I have it on the back of my book cover. And so for anybody who hasn't read that book, it's truly game-changing. I don't have a dog in that fight. I don't have the same publisher, but that book just blew my mind.
And I've had a chance to listen to and read it. It was recommended by a couple of friends. Could not agree with you more. And I'm a huge fan of what you read and listen to. The Arthur Brooks book, From Strength to Strength, about different strengths at different periods of life. And as opposed to keep on hitting yourself trying to do the same things you did when you were younger, you look to evolve and grow and more consulting, mentoring, counseling, those kinds of things. Maybe as you get older versus just trying to be, you know, the Carl Icahn of the world that could do it all the way through. But a fascinating, fascinating perspective. Or you watch guys like Rudy Giuliani, they're trying to do the same thing, but not going very well, but really trying to evolve oneself as well. And I think a fascinating perspective. Rick, what a pleasure to visit with you. I got the Grand Rapids reference wrong, but hit the DeVos reference right. And what a magnificent career. Thank you so much for taking the time with us today on the Becker Private Equity Podcast. What a pleasure to visit with you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Scott. It's been a joy. Loved it.